and welcome very much to Conversation. A pleasure to welcome to the program a dear old friend of Conversations, I would say the world, that being Bob Dobbs. And Bob Dobbs is being billed as a paramedia ecologist. But maybe share a little of your own background, because you were associated with McLuhan, that kind of stuff. And
well, I was born in 1922 in Paris. I was part of a very obscure intelligence agency around the world. And they were suspicious of Marshall McLuhan in the early 50s when he started publishing essays exposing how the newer intelligence agencies were managing the global economy.
The newer ones?
The newer results, the newer effects after World War II. Because before World War II, you had a battle between the Jesuits, the Freemasons, the Nazis, the Bolsheviks, and the Jewish thing that was leading to the Mossad. Yeah, the Zionist thing. So those five factions fought out in World War II.
Wait a minute, in terms of the intelligence services?
Yeah,
in
the intelligence and
so
representing nest eggs. You have the Jesuits, which is the Vatican. They've had wealth for 500 years.
Yes.
Then with the printing press, the Freemasons came in out of England. That was the Protestant Church. So that was a new group. Each new technology brings in a new intelligence agency.
A new intelligence agency.
A new grouping, a new power nest.
Right. Who can understand the environment, the invisible environment, often
they take advantage.
Yeah, right.
So what happens in the 19th century with the telegraph and the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, you have an intelligence agency that becomes the Bolsheviks, and they get their nest egg in Russia. In the Soviet Union.
Well, there was also an ideology behind it.
They're the ones who are the bureaucrats of the ideology. So then what's the next technology is radio. So what jumps on the radio medium becomes a new threat and forms a new nest egg of power is the Nazis.
Yeah, right.
Right. And then after World War II, the Middle East is very important. The Mossad becomes very important as a representative of the Freemasons, the Vatican, and the Nazis, not so much, and the Bolsheviks. It's
well, those
in the
are ideological things. And you have people representing established fortunes that come out of history in a certain sense. I guess there must have been fortunes that came out of the Roman Empire. And then you had Latifundia or that.
That's the Vatican.
You
the
would see that as the Catholic Church. But there are people that were secularly oriented and had a long established, maybe agricultural
base. That's represented by the Queen of England. That's the British Royal Society and what came from Bacon and the power that the Protestant Church established in England.
But power has resided much throughout history, ultimately, in who had military power. Then you have economic power.
And information.
Information serves both. Huh?
Yeah, and information is usually the new media. That's what I meant by the newer intelligence agencies. The new effects after World War II, when actually you had a global village and a one world situation, the front for that was the United Nations. But the satellite created a new problem. So McLuhan saw the effect of television, computer, and the satellite. And he started to expose actually real deep intelligence information that what I call and who I work with was the Solar Government, a new intelligence agency that was around the whole previous five factions, but was on top of what was called later Echelon. Out of England in 1960, they built up satellite hookups that they could monitor the global traffic of information.
Wait a minute. Okay, now we had a thing called the Illuminati. We had the Bilderbergers.
Those are the Jesuits and the Freemasons. Way back. That's old money.
That's
real old money.
Real old money.
Yeah.
Right.
Printing press.
You and your family were involved with those people that represent those interests that go way, way back in Europe, largely.
And they largely were put on the sidelines after World War II. That's why the Bilderbergers around Prince Bernhard and then later the Trilateral Commission had no problem getting together because they were on the sidelines. They represent the wealth of the printing press, but not the wealth post-Keynesian society where wealth was information and keeping people involved in consuming information. And then products became information. And therefore, there was no real power in a bureaucratic sense anymore. The people were in power because that's the consumerism.
Since when?
1960. Remember in the 50s, you had a little, it was a rough time in the late 40s, then you had a little boomlet in the early 50s, and then there was a bit of a recession by 56, 57, and then there was the fear of Sputnik, and then everything went into a military order here in the United States and crash programming of kids in education and emphasis on science. But the consumerism doesn't burst out until the Kennedy administration. And that's the wealth caused by the satellite. The satellite creates a rim spin for all the previous environments.
Rim spin?
You know, you're turning a wheel, and then there's always a spin
on the edge.
Yeah, side effect spin, spiraling out. That's rim spin. The rim spin of the wealth of the 60s was what people call the affluent 60s. But then that flipped into information itself via media, by television and early computers. That was wealth. Just keeping the talk going. McLuhan called it the word makes the market. And at that point, the White House became the figure for the ground of all media merging into pure information as the ground.
And Mr. McLuhan was writing that.
He did a book in 72 called Take Today, The Executive's Dropout. And he then in 74 did this great op-ed in the New York Times called A Media Approach to Inflation. And he explained the role of Henry Kissinger, explained the gambling casino economy, and he explained how the word makes the market. Mm-hmm. And the word makes the market is that everything is geared. This leads to herd pack journalism. Why are they always looking at what the president's going to say? What's the White House going to say? Because that's the last, what I call anthropomorphic image, the last human reference point in a world that's gone virtual and the machines have basically come alive.
A world that's gone virtual, and you have a term, the android meme. And you have the meme from Dawkins, which is like a cultural.
Yes. And what I mean by the android meme is that the modern electronic digital technology acquires the characteristics of speech, interactive, not one-way mass broadcasting. Once you had the interactive media, then as far as humans were concerned, they're like humans. They can talk back to us. And that living factor of the digital reality, which we call virtual reality, I call android meme, because no icons, no mimetic points, like Tom Wolfe says in his op-ed last night in the New York Times, he talks about that people don't come for the actual particular paintings in the museums or to buy clothes or to watch the Yankees. They go there for the fashion shows, F fashion. Yeah.
To be where the action is.
No, that's the people who live here. We're talking about the tourists.
Oh, I see, right.
The tourists come here
to
experience the hologram of F fashion. Or they go to the museums to experience culture, C.
Yeah.
And they go to see the Yankees. Whether the Yankees win or not is not a matter. It's to experience the myth and meme of baseball and all that stuff they see on TV. But those that live here, the bureaucrats of these massive media environments, the honchos, the ones who seem to have the power, they have to stay here to make one-on-one contact.
And
the
Over lunch,
yes. It saved New York City's economy.
And what do they call it? Gothamville? No, what do they call it?
Gothamland.
This is like a theme park.
Yes, that's for the subatomic peasants, people who come here as tourism. But outside that, because as the media gets smaller and smaller, and more friendly and more alive and more interactive.
And you got Kurzweil coming out with his book this autumn saying the singularity is near. The machines are going to get smarter than people.
Well, I think that's already happened.
Yeah, he's looking about 12 years out or so.
No, he's a bit behind me.
He predicted within about 3 months when the computer would defeat the world chess champion from 10 years out.
See, McLuhan predicted it in the 60s. He predicted the internet and all that happened, okay? Now, the point is not that McLuhan predicted what little gadget would show up that would change the economy. He predicted the effects on people's psychology and sociology and culture, how human nature would change.
He had read a lot of Joyce.
Finnegan's Wake is the internet, right there in the 30s. Started in the 20s. He has a word in there, capital E. Emailia, E-M-A-I-L-I-A, Emailia.
Emailia.
He knew how to use language to predict the future. It was more than he realized. But his book is actually a collage of viewpoints like you get on a chat line.
Of technological effects.
Effects, and then technology coming alive and becoming a living conversation. So McLuhan used that to get ahead of everybody. Now, the intelligence agencies understood this, the ones I was part of. They understood the meeting was the message. It didn't matter what the ideology was, which meme, or whether communism or capitalism won as an ideology.
That was all part of a propaganda spin thing.
That's to keep the
techno-electro
subatomic peasants involved in writing magazine articles.
Subatomic peasants.
Subatomic techno-peasants, which was the whole population living in the satellite global theater. Participating, the super audience worked for itself. No longer worked for anybody else. And now it's called reality TV and American Idol. This is where we've come to the end of the information society, and the present day audience is panicking because there's no medium for it to work with itself anymore. And so what you have is that the audience gets in the act in reality TV, survivor shows, game shows, where they replay the memes of the entertainment world. Mm-hmm. And then if someone wins, they're kicked off and they have to go make their own recording contracts and have concerts and write books. No one attends those because it's irrelevant. It's the audience watching itself. So you can look from Elvis to the Beatles to punk rock to digital music. The main meme was that highbrow culture, which Tom Wolfe, learning from McLuhan, satirized in The Painted Word, was taken over by amateur culture.
Pop culture
is the audience saying, I can do that.
Yeah, right.
You can read any history. When the Beatles saw Elvis, to be the Beatles, John Lennon them, they said, man, look at that guy. I love his music, and I think we could do that.
Yeah.
Then when the punk rockers saw the Ramones or the Sex Pistols, any of those bands, they said, geez, those guys can't play, but they're big stars, and so we can do that. It's more and more refinements of the audience gets in the act.
More and more participation on the part of the masses?
That's right. This isn't an economic effect, what I'm going to lead up to. What I didn't finish the point is that Kurzweil deals with the gadgets, and that's called efficient causality. But the effects on the users, on the societies, is called formal causality. These are four causes that Aristotle laid out. Final causality, material causality, efficient causality, and formal causality. Formal causality was dropped 300 years ago because we were into technological progress and science.
Well, hadn't we been in technological progress since we first picked up the stone tool?
We'd been in it, but it was invisible. Yeah. It didn't become an ideology until the 18th century.
And what form of ideology did it take in the 18th century? What are we talking about?
Science. We're talking about the revolution in France in 1789. All the polytechnical institutes came out of that era. It's a mass education of the citizen, of the peasant. These boys could go to school and learn whatever the latest technology was. That was a novelty. That was communism. Yeah. That was allowing everybody to share in the industrial technology.
And who was it that said, we shape our tools, thereafter our tools shape us, or ape us?
McLuhan changed it to ape us.
Who came up with that idea that we create environments and then those environments and those technologies have affected? McLuhan finally came around saying the medium is the message.
Who wrote Erewhon. And he was the one who started to write and see that technology was part of evolution. And he came up with the answer, well, which came first, the chicken or the egg? He said the chicken was the egg's way of getting more egg. You know, so he collapsed it. And then Emerson or Thoreau, I think it's Emerson in about 1870, he said that the body is the magazine of all inventions. So he understood that technology is an extension of the body. Here's something I was reading in the paper coming down here. This is the old Satanist Bible, written in the 60s. And apparently one of the Satanist dogma or dictums or aphorisms is, quote, as environments change, no human ideal stands as sure or certain. So as environments change, no human ideal stands as sure. The idea that technologies change people was a cliche by the 60s. All right? Started in the 19th century. It's not that McLuhan came up with the idea that the media changed us. He came up to show how they changed us. No one had done that yet. James Joyce, Schumpeter in economics, they began to see that technology added a new dimension to people's lives that no one really thought. In the 19th century, people thought they were adding technologies to help humans, not change them or change mass movements or
that
culture.
Those technologies out there reflect back on us.
Yes.
We shape our tools and thereafter our tools shape us. So the existence of television reflects back on the evolution of consciousness.
McLuhan added to it, he realized that tools ape us. They mime our physiological structures, our sensory mechanisms.
Yeah, he did a pun on
that. Not only shaped us. That was normal to understand that.
Sure. Do you think we're going to go out into space? I got four grandchildren now.
They're already moving through deeper spaces with television and their computer.
It's the first one who took a systems view of things and called this spaceship Earth we're living on.
Right. And that was a 19th century metaphor. He did not point out the new space, the proprioceptive spaces, the inner trip, McLuhan called it. When you're watching TV, you're moving beyond your body, and other bodies are coming inside you. You can't even visualize the TV body that is added to the first nature form that we developed. The second nature form causes incredible changes in landscapes that are not perceivable by the eye or to be spoken by the ear. Why did drug taking take over in the 60s? LSD and the inner trip? Because it was miming what people were already doing through TV.
Well, LSD wasn't even invented until
1943. Actually, you know, I was there the day that Hoffman took it in April 1943. I was sent there by my employers to see
In Switzerland or something?
And I was in his lab, and I didn't know that he was taking it that day.
Or there was such a thing existing.
No, we knew, because he discovered it in 1938 and put it on the shelf for 5 years. And in 1943, events of that day led him to accidentally get on a taste of it. And then he went back a few days later and did it again. But the point was that the job of the Solar Government Intelligence Agency, the group I'm talking about, was to look...
You were involved with them then?
Yes, my father was.
Your father, so I
went along with them. I was only 21. But the point was is that the people I worked with monitored new technologies because they understood the meaning was the message. And as I said earlier, the wealthy oligarchy funds from the 17th, 18th, 19th century were sitting on the sidelines during the 30s and 40s because money became public property. With the Keynesian Revolution, the private ownership of money collapsed with the World Depression 29 to 31. Then after that, governments took over and made money a guaranteed environment for people. And that's called the New Deal or fascism or socialism or communism. The industrial peasants now had to have money regardless of where they were.
And they had some way to create demand.
Yeah. So they realized it was a medium. Before that, it was a ground and people didn't know it was a medium.
And Mr. Nixon in 1972 said, we're all Keynesians now.
Let me give you a little secret here. Since Deep Throat came out last week, the reason Nixon was Watergated was because on August 15th, 1971, he created a floating exchange and created a fluid economy, no longer based on the Bretton Woods setup of 1944. Some of the oligarch money objected to that. Yeah. So they Watergated Nixon because of that, not for any other reason.
Not because of the plumbers and things?
I don't want to name a particular person, but a particular person was pretty angry about what happened to Elder Hiss. Because this person was involved with secret negotiations with the Bolsheviks in the 50s, and that was normal. That saved a lot of nuclear war or any Cold War intensity. So Nixon was the one who caused problems with that when he was vice president.
So you've been somewhat involved with the intelligence agency. Could you tell me why they missed the implosion of the Soviet Union?
Right. First off, I'm one of the few people in the world who predicted the Berlin Wall would go down. I did it on an LA radio station October 1988. No one believed me. A year later, when the wall went down on November 89, the DJ, he said, holy shit, that's Bob. And they replayed it on the end of November, proof that I had said it. How come I knew that? Because I knew that West Germany had made a deal with Gorbachev in 82 through my own friends and Dr. Beter. Okay, so we knew it was coming.
Dr. Beter?
He was an intelligence specialist in Washington. He's the one who exposed the...
You're well acquainted with the intelligence sources in the world and everything?
Matter of fact,
where are some of the major sources where people are interested in understanding things?
For the record, Art Felt was not Deep Throat. He was an extension of Deep Throat.
What did you say he was?
You know who Deep Throat was? Al Haig. Okay? Now, that's why I'm going to put that on the record here. And I was involved with Watergate, so I know who did what. Al Haig was Deep Throat, okay, at the deepest level. Mark Felt is a lower down guy. Now, you have to understand
time,
that when the information environment implodes around the White House, and the
when
word
the
becomes...
information environment implodes around
the White House.
What are you talking about?
The word that makes the market, as I was saying. Well, this is all related to McLuhan, as you're going to see. So when the word makes the market from, actually, 1947 on, when they formed the National Security Act, which said, we have the right to lie to people. We have a right to tell Americans that they shouldn't know certain things because the facts were there was no United States anymore. And that's why the intelligence agencies, from that point on, 1947, lied to people. Now, the people expect real information. By the time you get to the 60s, 70s, no real information anymore. You can't have real
you
information.
You think you had real information coming from our government before that?
Yes. It was illegal to lie. Not legal from 1947 on. What happened by 1971, when the economy is not built on gold anymore, it's built on information, and Nixon knew that as president because he lived it every day, he was a radical. He says, let's get rid of the reference to gold. And then that led to a lot of problems.
They let
problems.
It flow, yeah.
What he didn't understand, why did the CIA or any of these agencies not know? Because they were dealing with an environment from the 60s on where information was relatively useless.
Well, you've got this thing about information, but if I think of geostrategic thinking of the time you're talking about, I think of George Kennan, containment, British sea power, the extension
of
power.
Myth of nations.
That geostrategic thinking, that's what I think.
Nations died in 1918.
Wait a minute. Nations died in 1918. What was that all about in Germany and France and all those countries that still had a sense of nation?
That was advertising. When you brought in radio in the 20s, what happens? Tribal memories come up. Japan, Italy, and Germany. Those three countries, not as industrialized as Britain and the United States, they saw that they could create new, put on a sense of their own tribal history because of the echo chamber that radio caused. The formal causality of radio was retrieved at the more tribalized cultures.
Now you see, you're getting into language you throw out very adroitly and
that's
so forth,
right.
But probably doesn't make sense when you said it retrieves.
I'm not
this
here to
that.
Make sense. I'm here to stimulate.
Okay.
It's what McLuhan said, bashing cliches to create new patterns. If you're listening, and this can be listened to again if you tape it, and I always do my shows with you to put stuff on the record. In 1999, I was at a conference. I went, for once in my life, I went to a UFO wacky conference to tell them about alien contact. And I laid out what happened 27,500 BC, and I also explained how the contact will happen, the official contact with the Boothians by 2025.
Boothians.
You ever heard of Arcturus?
I've never heard of Octurus.
Okay, it's a famous star. It's in the constellation called Bootes. B-O-O-T-E-S. I mean, your booty is Zappa. He had a picture of the Bootes constellation.
Zappa was so great.
On one of his albums. People. No, wait, listen. He had the Bootes constellation on One Size Fits All on the cover art. And he had on that album, did a vehicle land in blah, blah, blah. It was about UFOs. He kind of put that little embed. I don't know how he knew that. But the Bootes is a constellation, and they are the ones that are officially going to make the contact with it. And I said this in 1999. Everybody was excited about what I had to say. And they said, well, will you come back to the conference next year? I said, no, I've done my statement. I'm not going to make any more money on it or anything. It's on tape. We'll see in 30 years, am I right?
You know what they're going to do? What are the Bootes going to do?
They're going to leave a device on the space station that'll be up there, and some astronaut will see it. The device will have some kind of written language that the person can understand. They'll say, press here and talk. And that's when it'll happen. They'll press here, and it'll be like that guy in Slaughterhouse-5, the movie where he goes up in a little bulb. That was 30 years ago, that movie. Anyway, the Kurt Vonnegut novel. But the point is, you press a button, and then something will manifest to him. That'll be the official contact.
Why is it not more part of the general knowledge?
Because we're in an information vortex of a hurricane of information. Every absurd viewpoint has a magazine, has a show, and everything. People celebrate all kinds of points of view. It's very hard to stay on the truth or on a fact. Facts are irrelevant. That's what I mean by post-information.
Well, facts are Bootes, not irrelevant.
They are irrelevant. I was explaining this to Larry Gell. The ridiculousness of his show. He now just told me that he's going to have access to the whole world. His show's going to be seen. And he says the FBI and the police and the PR companies, they all watch his show because they want to see what the bureaucrats and the ambassadors are saying. I say, Larry, that's totally irrelevant. These ambassadors cannot solve any problems. He says, you're right, Bob. I said, the point is they have to be tender, serious, and they offer problems or solutions, and they discuss them in the United Nations and whatever.
Who can offer solutions, or are there no solutions to be offered?
Technology is the solution. Genetic engineering over time. A lot of roadkill on the way, but we will improve over the next 100 years. Cold fusion will be a tremendous breakthrough.
Have we improved?
Yes. We have expanded our environments to the point where the satellite extended the whole planet, and then that gets smaller and smaller. Then you have the digital era comes over, and the digital era is technology coming alive and being niche marketed to you or to particular groups, and it becomes user friendly. Technology becomes so friendly that kids spend all their time engaging in the voluntary ESP.
And the technology is an extension of consciousness.
It is consciousness.
It is consciousness itself.
Yes. Speech. Uh-huh. We would not be conscious unless we had speech. Speech is the first technology, and then gesture before that.
So what makes this age different than all of human history going back 200,000 years?
You know what makes it different?
I don't know about Bootes.
This flesh body, I call it the chemical body, has been marginalized and obsolesced. We don't even live in it. So the normal human form that people think they have doesn't exist anymore.
What does that mean? I mean, you're sitting there, I'm talking to you now.
Yes, but we're being taped and we're being broadcast. The real thing about humans is they communicate, and their technology is communication. Mm-hmm. And therefore, speech and older forms of communication are obsolete. That is what's disappeared.
Speech and older forms of communication
do not modulate reality.
Speech,
writing. Movies.
Movies are obsolete. Yeah, yeah. Television's obsolete. Computer programs are obsolete. What isn't obsolete?
The fact that technology came alive. That's what's not obsolete.
Technology. Where do we go to get a sense of understanding what it is that's actually taking place in your view?
I was McLuhan's archivist. Yeah. I was up at the actual archives in Ottawa last summer where I wanted to see what I organized. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen where it was sent. I organized it for the family. But I decided, having just spoken to you just before I went to Ottawa and did a show last year, and we always get into this discussion over who has the most relevant perception, Bucky or McLuhan. So I went and looked at McLuhan's correspondence with Bucky. The point is that McLuhan is a good friend of Bucky Fuller's. Now, in 1975, I was talking to Marshall, 74, I said, what do you say about Bucky Fuller? I just brought it up. And he said, well, Bucky's a 19th century artist, whereas I and John Cage are 20th century artists. And I just let that lie. He's saying that Bucky is rearview mirror, not as in tune with what's happening as himself. And it's interesting he names a musician as equal to him, because McLuhan John was a Cage. Musician, too. He said we lived entirely by music. Uh-huh. That was acoustic space, tactile space, and he considered himself a painter, a musician, a scientist, a physicist, a doctor, all the specialties.
Well
They'd
good.
All imploded into the word makes a market, and because he understood that, he could surf it. So I finally found last summer, that's 30 years later, 74 to 2004, him spelling out in detail what Bucky was limited on. Uh-huh. And this is really important. Right. So it begins with synergetics. Now, that's probably the time that book came out. I think the book was coming out in the middle 70s. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming this was written in the middle 70s. He says synergetics is a form of hendiades.
Hendiades
means one by means of two. If you look it up in the dictionary, you'll see a poet says, the jar was rusty and red. Rusty is red. It's like redundant to ed and red. It's a poetic device to create a more vivid image, but you're kind of repeating the same idea in the second
redundant
adjective.
Redundant.
Yeah.
Okay.
The point
it's
is it means one by means of two.
Right.
One by means of two. So he's saying synergetics is a form of hendiades. He says, I'm making the new. So synergetics is at the title. And he says, a form of hendiades, which is a chapter title in one of his books done in 1970, a book called Cliched Archetype.
You can look 1970.
I'm making the new in all processes or situations, as opposed to matching. Uh-huh. Most people, literate people, try to match. They try to take what their image and information is in their mind and see if it fits reality outside.
Yeah.
It's
linear,
a matching.
Linear.
But pre-literate people and post-literate people are hallucinating and making.
Pre-literate
like
and
we
post-literate.
Are.
Yeah, we're all right, I understand
we're
that.
Making.
We're closing quotes. On
yeah.
And we're getting tactically involved with
that's
the environment
right.
around
very
us. We're like back in nature, except it's cosmic.
That's right. We're both creating the reality.
Yeah.
It's not just I'm saying this is it, and you see if it spells right. So hendiades is making the new in all processes or situations. Then he quotes Bucky, getting 5 out of 4. There's your synergy, getting 5 out of 4. Now, McLuhan developed a tetrad, a four-part structure, but he also was very interested in 5. And he's saying, Bucky is getting 5 out of 4. You get more than you put in. This will lead to confusion, as it will lead later. The way quantitative man looks at change. He's saying Bucky is a quantitative man, looks at change, sees that you get more out than you put in. Bucky has transformed the world in Pythagorean terms. His topology of universe, or topology as universe. Then McLuhan says, topology is a tetrahedron, big Bucky Fuller word. Then he says, or pattern recognition, a big McLuhan word.
Hmm.
So topology
or
is tetrahedron, or pattern recognition in geometric Euclidean space, which is alphabetic visual space.
Linear.
Yes. So he's saying Bucky is a linear man looking at the making phenomenon still from a matching 19th century Euclidean perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He says Bucky has reduced all relationships to tetrahedron relationships. Out of this we get new quantities unexpectedly. New quantities, not qualities, new quantities.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he said, you know, we had enough to feed the world. He said, do we also get new resources? McLuhan says, yes, this is synergetics. Synergetics provides for new resources out of existing knowledge. It recycles, for example, translates every physical happening into topology, into tetrahedrons.
Hmm.
Now, the tetrahedron's properties and advantages, McLuhan says, as Aristotle talked about the world in terms of spheres, so Bucky talks in terms of tetrahedrons, because everything fits.
Buckyballs, it's all
buckyballs.
Yeah.
Spheres. And he's saying this comes back from Aristotle. But McLuhan then says what his difference is, what his point that he thinks Bucky doesn't get.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he has. He has HMM, his initial.
Mm-hmm.
He has his initials there. And he says, metaphor is a four-sided figure, and metonymy, which is another kind of metaphor, is a three-sided figure. A tetrahedron is a three-sided figure in a four-sided solid.
Right.
Then McLuhan says the universe is an utterance or word. Remember I'm talking about the word makes the market?
Yeah.
The universe, this is maybe his Catholic theology, but not just that, because
Catholic,
he updated the Catholic theology.
Yeah.
The universe is an utterance or word. Then he says, what Bucky doesn't know is that he has transformed world, then in brackets, topology of tetrahedral relationships. Bucky has discovered verbal universe, a making universe, and doesn't recognize it. So that in the end, triangles and tetrahedra covers the ground. Bucky covers it, but he doesn't understand what he's saying. And what he really means is that Bucky still was a machine maker, an efficient causality guy, and a final causality guy, and a material causality guy. He worked revolutions, all those points, but he missed the formal causality where we make a universe through information itself, through talking, and the way the talk show reality is taken over in all kinds of media. That is a making of reality, not a matching. And that's why when Larry Gell says, people look at his show to see what the truth is. And I said to Larry, that's not the truth. The truth is irrelevant. The PR firms say that we do lies, and Larry, you do truth. And I said, yes, and the lies are more valuable now because ever since we have TV, if we didn't have the distraction of the information environment that TV brought in the 50s, 60s, we would have had a nuclear war. Mm. The software dialogue, the software distraction saved us from the old military panics, military tribal paranoids that would lead to national war, you know, battles. That was superseded by
this. You think we're home free now?
The machines are home free. We are not home free. We will have cold fusion by 2012. The effects precede causes. And how do the effects precede causes? We have frictionless energy experience already with 24/7 internet. Mm-hmm. This can't be controlled information. People can experience it, and it's relatively inexpensive, mm-hmm. and it just never stops. So the software, which came out of technology, Second Nature's invention, is prefiguring the merger of First Nature and Second Nature. And First Nature is the perpetual energy of the sun and the universe. Second Nature, humans have made technology that always had friction and wind down and mm-hmm. stopped, mm-hmm. but with cold
entropy.
But with cold fusion, it's the first time humans have made a technology that has the characteristics of First Nature. So I call it a fusion of First Nature and Second Nature.
Well, there have been
promises about here. It's frictionless base.
Yeah.
Frictionless base. And then that will be able to solve the shelter problems. We never solved the shelter first body problem. We've solved communication problems. But how to relate that friction-based communication society based mm-hmm. on money and the old style of economics to an actual reality which is not based on friction mm-hmm. in communication media mm-hmm. and then eventually with technology, cold fusion, that will allow us to live in a building and have heat and all the basic needs to protect
the body. And be able to transcend the envies and the so forth of a situation of scarcity.
People will then have energy to do with their time, and they won't know what to do, or they're going to invent a lot of things. So I wouldn't be surprised that once we establish this collectively negatropic situation, mm-hmm. then human perversity and humans need to have different variety will come out. So people will set up game zones where they will kill each other mm-hmm. as a game. They'll do all kinds of bizarre expressionist things, just like we have in culture and information culture, mm-hmm. all forms of bizarre. The human condition of being born here and mm-hmm. looking for variety and spice of excitement and experiencing new energies and environments, that never changes. But we've created a second nature that has caught up to that perverse need. Then we get cold fusion, which will happen in China. You know why? This is an intelligence agency prediction by me, is that Bush will move into Iran. He'll bog down the Middle East even worse. Saudi Arabia won't be able to get their oil out. The one country that's developing all through this decade, the naughty knots, China. Uh-huh. They will need oil. Uh-huh. They will really need it. They're a different mindset. And they will immediately go to alternative sources, and they're going to
Bonds
and Fleischmann will win.
Yeah.
It'll be implemented, and that'll be the breakthrough for humanity of a frictionless-based energy system. Uh-huh. And it'll be thankful to Bush for getting the bogged up in
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first. The intelligence source of Robert Dobbs, Bob Dobbs. Bob, I'm sorry we could go on talking and running down. I mean, it's really good talking. Always good talking with you. Your pleasure to talk to him. Always a pleasure to talk to Bob Dobbs. And Bob, thanks a lot for coming in. I really appreciate your coming in. It was really good talking with you, as always.
I'll see you next round.